I laugh. One of the things we struggled with, we had so much information and so many pieces of this puzzle that overlap. Do we start out and define everything and then circle back and risk repeating, or do we just, you know, jump right in? I think we went with the jump right in approach. So if we seem a little bit all over the place, we're trying very hard to be focused. And I think we've done a good job. I hope we have. But that is the reason. These rules are similar and overlapping and related. And so we wanted to discuss each topic at a time and really dig into it and hit it from my perspective, hit it from Stephanie's perspective. So hopefully we will prove to have accomplished that at the end of today. Okay. And then last, an employer-sponsored fund at some other charity. Not a whole lot, I don't believe, for me to say there. That would, I think, include the what I tend to call an outsourced option at, you know, I think Stephanie referred to them as large providers, the kind of EAFs, E4Es of the world, largely charities focused on this in a slightly more commercial way, but you know, I don't mean that negatively whatsoever. But handling these sorts of funds on a large scale in the way that a large employer can come in and say, here's our money, here's our fund, here's what we want you to do, go. And then they make all of the administrative procedures shake out and administer it really kind of from soup to nuts. Okay, if we could jump to the next slide, I'm going to provide a couple more comments on vehicles, and then we'll jump into the good stuff. So under the private foundation category, again, in terms of what types of organizations can provide disaster relief, you can again have a private foundation with broad enough purposes to get there. We have had a handful of clients who've done just that, or again, have broad enough purposes or are willing to evolve their purposes and amend their purposes to get there. Obviously, a private foundation that has very specific disaster relief purposes. And then last but not least, the employer-sponsored private foundation. That structure is going to be subject to predominantly the same sorts of requirements that a public charity bill, with one major, major caveat. The employer-sponsored private foundations are limited to only distributing for qualified disasters, which, while pretty broad, again, excludes small-scale events and more personal events in a way that is fairly restrictive, in my view. Understandable, but fairly restricted. And then last but not least, the employer-provided assistance. So this is the category that is absolutely not charitable, at least not from the IRS perspective, in any manner. But it's so relevant to this discussion because it comes up in almost every single conversation that we have. I know, Stephanie, you echoed the same thing when we were preparing. And the issue usually is something horrible happens. Money has already come in. Maybe the employer has already done something to support their employees that are, you know, in great urgent need, but it's going to take a minute to figure out what vehicle we're going to use from a short, mid, and long-term perspective to make all of these things happen. So oftentimes what we see is for the big employers, they may do something initially directly in the form of employer payments. And then in the meantime, we're working on setting up the true fund that's going to operate on a long-term basis. The employer-provided assistance, just to give you super brief highlight here, covered under Section 139 of the code. It is also limited to those qualified disasters, and there is a specific limitation on a phrase referred to as qualified disaster relief payments. If you meet the definition of those payments, those are still deductible as a business expense. They are treated as gift to the employees, but again, not charitable. So if you have, say, an employee contributing to this fund of the employer somehow, not charitable. Common misconception there. As far as the types of distributions that can be made, and this is something I think it's come very much to a head and been highlighted over the last 2 years with COVID, because this was something, I mean, we've just never spent as much time talking about it as we have in the last 2 years, give or take. Those distributions or those payments can be made for reasonable and necessary expenses that are personal, family, living, funeral, any of those that are incurred as a result of a qualified disaster. And then secondarily, there's another category that we see used a little bit less, focused on repair, replacement of residences or contents, again, attributable to a qualified disaster. So super specific parameters, few other limitations in that those expenses cannot be ones that are otherwise covered by insurance. There has to be a mechanism to demonstrate that the amount paid is commensurate with what the expenses should have been. There is a fairly decent focus on the reasonable and necessary element, ensuring that we're not looking at something that looks more luxury. And probably the biggest takeaway here, and this is going to apply across the board to everything we talk about today, those payments can just never be made as a form of income replacement. Not, oh, we laid off these people and we want to make them whole for the next 2 weeks until they come off furlough. Not that. And not, oh, well, what if we just, make them whole at a 25% rate? What if you just give them 25% of their comp just to help them get by in the meantime?